Army Nurses Corps. She is one of the first members of the Detroit unit of the Women's Overseas Service League. I am Lois Collette, a World War II member of the League. Today is October 23rd, 1982. Estelle, why did you decide to join or enlist in the Army Nurses Corps?
Patriotically. I could not think of not being with my country at a time like that.
So
I enlisted with the Red Cross, served with the Red Cross at Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia, and left for overseas around September 17th. Getting over there, there just didn't seem to be, there were six nurses in the group, and evidently there was no place at that particular time that we were really assigned to. So a call came through for volunteer nurses for the frontline duty. We discussed it among ourselves, and one girl, probably should never have gone overseas, died while we were there. It was lonely, was out in the cold. So Kitty, who was an old-time friend, we had gone to school together, went in service together. So Kitty looked at me, and I looked at Kitty, and Kitty said, "Will we?" And I said, "So what? Couldn't be any worse." You know what I'm
saying? That's just fine. What had you been doing before you enlisted?
Before I enlisted, I was a public health nurse in Jersey City, New Jersey. My father had a feeling, after I finished training, I really realized that I wanted to be a public health nurse. And I remember my dad saying to me, "A rolling stone gathers no moss." So when it came time to go in service, I was really afraid to tell them I was going to do this. So I finally decided I would just go to the American Red Cross office and enlist. Figured they couldn't do much to me after that. So when the time came, my notice came through from the American Red Cross that I was assigned to Fort Oglethorpe. I told my mother, and she took one look and she went to bed. And my dad said, "I'll show you something, young lady." So we went down to the bay where the ships and boats were coming in. There was a great deal of talk about these submarines being around. And my dad said, "You'll either be blown up or you'll come back pregnant." But I went in service just the same.
Of course you did. What kind of uniforms were you issued, Estelle, when you went over?
Don't make me laugh. I've never been so shoddy in my life. By the time I arrived home with this worn-out uniform and a pair of rubber boots in New York City in July, I wanted to drown myself.
How were you reimbursed? What were your wages?
Well, if I can remember, we got $50 a month, and 10 of that went for insurance. That's what I remember.
That was a lot to live on, right? Because you didn't have many expenses.
Well, they fed us.
Yeah, they fed you, and didn't have much time.
And we had our clothes, as such as they were. So what? I guess we... I don't know what I did with it.
Then where did you serve when you went overseas?
Overseas, I served at Sully, France, and in Germany. It's a little small town in Germany. Oh, I can't think of the name of it. I'd have to look at my discharge papers. But it was a university town. We'd taken over the university for a hospital. Oh, that was it. I had taken care of, especially boys, so I was told, as a reward, I could either go home or I could go to Germany. So you know me, I went to Germany. And they made our, the boys march from France to Germany to prove their gallantry. So that was the reason for nurses being needed in Germany. The boys, when they got up there, we had a great deal of typhoid, pneumonia, things of that sort, not much surgery. So that was why I was in Germany.
Good. And when you were on your way overseas earlier this evening, you said, I said, was there anything particular interest in your travels on the boat? You said you could fill up pages. So do you want to tell me a little bit about the conditions on the ship going overseas?
Well, we went overseas, 350 nurses. 350 passengers, some soldiers. It turned out, we were not aware of it till we got there, till we got off the boat, that we were carrying grain, which was very dangerous. And about the middle of the night, one night, we woke up, this Dean and I, Kitty and I, were in the same boat, same bunk together. The water was up to our knees, and Kitty said, Estelle, I think we're bombed. And I still remember that the boat, it was so little, it was terrible to send people over in a boat like that, just terrible. And we got out, and I was, no lights, you know, there were no lights on the boats at all. And we weren't supposed to get out of those bunks. And I said to Kitty, well, gee, let's go up on deck if we can. So we went up. Most beautiful night I ever remembered. The moon was shining and the boat was tipping. We got through. Yeah. Nothing happened. It was just a rough sea. Just a rough sea. But we were sure when we put our feet out, up right up to our knees.
Oh my gosh.
And we were sure we were hit.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
We were sure we were hit. But as I say, Kitty was just remarkable in those days.
Where did you land then when you got overseas?
We landed, that was another thing. We landed in, we had to get across the North Sea. So we were in Calais. I'd have to check that.
Oh, you landed in Calais.
But I'd have to check that. Now, I can't remember, and I should because I've been back so many times. I can't remember whether to from Calais, why would we have to go across the North Sea, and we had to?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
You know, I better.
Yeah, we can check those things out now, and we can talk again.
I'm just trying to think. We had a very bad experience with that. I was going to look at my map before we talk about this.
Do you want me to turn this off a second?
No.
Okay.
Will I forget it?
No.
I do know that before we got to this god-awful place that we finally landed in, where no one wanted us, that we had to cross the North Sea. And as we came into this town, which I think was Calais, mm-hmm. I'll look up a map one of these days. We got into town. We were all ready to get on the boat. When we were rushed back to what we thought, and I have always thought, was a house of ill fame. There was no place to put us. And we sat up all night watching what was going on. And about 4:30 in the morning, they got us out of bed to get us across, because there were U-boats.
Yeah.
And it was rough. You couldn't stand or sit or anything, but we finally got across there, and then we landed in this god-awful place that I just told you about.
Okay.
So that was the experience,
yeah,
of getting to our destination.
It's really hard to comprehend now that we're so comfortable, the conditions.
I think of it now and I've gotten to be such a panty waist. I want all my comforts.
What were your conditions then like overseas, both working and living, and what were, when you were over there?
Well, we, as I say, we were a surgical hospital, and the French had given us part of the French barracks. There were French nurses on one end of the barracks, and we were on the other. And Spartan, no running water, no place to bathe. We got lice in our underwear, so we threw the underwear away that the Red Cross had given us. We had absolutely just our uniforms left. The food was, there was, you know, it was just what the soldiers were eating.
Yes.
There was nothing else. We had soup, and everybody was, they said it was meat, horse meat, and I didn't eat a bit of meat all while I was there, because I figured I didn't want any horse meat. That's true.
Yeah, I imagine.
We had, we just had, when I think about those boys coming in, patients, and badly wounded, and nothing but that awful stuff to feed them. Awful. Why should we complain?
Yeah, right. What were the, and then what were the hospital conditions like?
Well, they were very primitive. We had this barracks, and actually, this will be unbelievable to people who can't understand this, but we had very little, we did our surgery under the most primitive means, not primitive in those days,
yeah,
but
right,
today.
Right.
We had nothing in the way of medication but morphine to hand these patients. And what they used for cleaning up wounds, you wouldn't believe it, but maggots, the ones that were walking with maggots, those maggots cleaned up the wounds better than any medication. You'd have an arm just torn to pieces.
Just can't.
And just loaded with maggots. And we were advised, leave them alone. And of course the nurse would want to clean
them.
Yeah,
right.
But those maggots cleaned up all the infection in those wounds.
Just, I don't see how you girls, you know, could have kept sane during all those conditions. Were there any particular highlights in your, you know, would you like give us a few highlights overseas?
Well, all I can remember is we worked so hard and were so tired most of the time. I think we really worked very hard. There was no such thing as hours. If you went on duty, you stayed on duty, and there were constant boys.
And I often wondered about that. Your nurses, especially when you were working in surgery up at the front, you must have been on, did you work 12 hours before you were relieved, or what were you supposed to do?
There was very little relief. That was one reason why they call for volunteers. And see, the nurses that were in the surgery, and then we didn't keep the patients, that's one thing. As soon as they were operated on, then the trains took these boys out. But we always had new, we couldn't, there was no, we, well, we'd keep some that were terminal, mm-hmm. that we knew were going to
yeah.
die on the, that.
Oh,
that
I see, so the trains were...
The trains were there and took the boys, God knows how long it took the poor kids to get there. But usually it was ambulatory patients that now, for instance, if you had a leg off, if you could move to the train, you went on the train, or
yeah.
something of that sort. As I say, I don't think you ever, anybody, unless they lived right there with those boys as a nurse and took care of them, could realize the nobility and the courage of those boys.
How far were you from the front line?
We weren't more than 50 miles away from Grand Pré. Our hospital was right out in the woods between Verdun and Grand Pré, and we were the 89th Division was attached there.
But I understand that there was a little romance during your service.
Oh, very much.
Would you tell us a little bit about...
That was interesting in this way. That would be a long story if I told it to you. But the armistice was signed, and we came off duty, and as I say, we had been working very hard all that time, and then the armistice came along, and there was a lull. But then they went out and picked up these boys that were on the field and brought them into the hospital, into our place. But most of them, there were very few surgery because they died by that time. But we had a lot of illness, mm-hmm. boys with illness. And among them, well, I guess I told you about this young boy.
Yes.
This young boy that I didn't have anything to do then because I was a surgical nurse. And this older nurse came over, she said, "Say, Davis, or Mac," and I wasn't Davis, Mac. She said, what are you going to do? We need nurses over here. And she said, "We've just got a bunch of men in offices with wounds, and we need help." And I said, "Oh, I'll come over and work. I'd rather work than do nothing." And among them, I said, there were five men, all my own, the man that finally was my husband, was wounded with shrapnel. And they came in and we were working with them, and this fellow, I looked at him, he was helping everybody. I thought, "Well, there isn't much the matter with you." And he said, "No, not much, if I get this junk out of my arm." So we used to, you probably did it too, some of our mothers would send us bread, you know, or send us. So one of the girls' mothers had sent us a great big can of cinnamon. And we had a little stove, and we were on night duty. And when I got over and we cleaned up these patients and got them in bed and got things settled. And we nurses started over to our little kitchen to have some cinnamon toast. And all of a sudden, we looked out and here was this face. This man was there and he said, "Gee, I love cinnamon toast." It was Ray Davis.
Your husband,
yeah.
To be, Ray.
So we said, "Well, come on in and you can have some with us." So Ray hung around. He was hung around the hospital. Then he was discharged. And his outfit was about, maybe 10 miles up the road. And he'd come down every night and I'd go walking. That's where I learned to walk do my 2-3 miles a day in my rubber boots. And every night after we'd have a walk, we walked in mud. It was nothing but mud. Ray would clean my rubber boots for me and put them outside the door. Well, this night we were walking, and we found this young boy that we took in.
Yeah.
And as I say, that was my romance. And then when this young kid, he was just a kid, and naturally, he became very jealous of Ray. Because I'd go out to dance in the night with Ray, and he used to take care of him in the daytime. And I finally remember one when he was getting a lot better, you know, and he, like all patients, he didn't think anybody could do anything, only myself, because I'd been with him for so long. And so this night, Ray came down, and it was a big dance. This war was over. And I said, "Oh, I can't go away. I can't leave that kid. He feels so bad." And Ray said, "Well, that's ridiculous." He said, "He's better." So I got this one nurse. Oh, this one nurse. I can't wish I could remember her name. She was a dear girl, but, you know, girl was sort of plain and prodding. And I said to her, "Will you relieve me tonight? Take care of this boy." She said, "I sure would." She said, "If I ever had a man that had the love on me like Davis has on you." And I thought, "Gee, he doesn't love me, does he?" I thought, "She's crazy." I can remember thinking that. "Oh," she said, "I would die right on the spot." But it was, he was overcompensated, you know. To him, I think in those days, men weren't used to seeing a woman running around in an old butcher apron and a pair of rubber boots and being able to, you know, work.
What were you doing in Armistice Day, Estelle?
Oh, I'd been on duty for something like I don't know how many hours. We were very, very busy. You see, the fighting was terrifically heavy up there at that particular time. And I'd been on duty, I think, all night. If I remember rightly, it was all day and all night. We all were. You know, there were so few of us there. No, well, the girls were up in Paris. Had an awfully nice time of it. I'm always glad I wasn't. I was always glad.
Right.
If my duty was just what I went, what I had in mind when I went over to that American Red Cross and asked to enlist, I think I've been very fortunate in being able. I think it's been the biggest thing in my life that I've been able to see the kind of service that I did see. Well, anyway, came off duty, and we had a kind of an enclosure where we had taken in some German prisoners, just kids. And I came across to go to my barracks, and here were all of our boys and these German boys loving and dancing up and down and with each other. And I go, I didn't even know it was an armistice. We didn't know
right.
It was an armistice.
You're too busy working.
I thought, are these kids crazy? What are they doing? But I was awfully tired and I didn't pay any attention, and I went in and I looked up at the wall, and here on my roommate's tin hat was a great big rat as big as a cat. And I was so tired I didn't care. And I'm as scared of a mouse today. Even a bee.
And that's just wonderful, Estelle. I really thank you. And consequently, you came home, you married Ray, and you had
three children,
and they're all living right near you.
Right near me, and I feel I've been a very fortunate person.
Thank you.